Beyond Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's happening and welcome to the Locked On Pistons podcast. This is your episode for Thursday, February 15th. And hey, a victory for the Detroit Pistons going into the All-Star break. This is your host, Matt Shook. You can follow me on Twitter at Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, another underscore after that. Give us a follow on the Locked On Pistons Twitter feed as well at Locked On Pistons. And we got a Facebook page that you can find by searching Locked On Pistons-Matt Shook. Give that a like on Facebook as well. Pistons beat the Hawks 104-98 on Wednesday night to go into the All-Star break with a winning mark there, as a losing mark overall, but a winning way to end the first part of the schedule, so to speak. Blake Griffin has made the Pistons into a bigger story throughout the NBA, but also a TMZ story. We'll be talking about that a little bit later on in the podcast. And also, I'm going to share with you a couple of tweets that jumped out to me the last day or so from Pistons Nation that I think are really important ones, and kind of summarize where we're at and talk about the road going forward as well for the Pistons, who are 28-29 going into the All-Star break after the win at Little Caesars Arena against the Atlanta Hawks. Ish Smith, 22 points and 9 assists in the win. Blake Griffin very nearly had a triple-double and should have if a couple of Pistons would have knocked down some easy shots that could have given him the final assist that he needed. He had 13 points, 12 boards, and 9 rebounds. Andre Drummond, 13 points and 15 rebounds in his last game before playing in his second All-Star game for the NBA, I guess, Team LeBron, no longer the Eastern Conference team. Reggie Bullock had 15 points for the Pistons, and James Ennis III. I don't know if we should be calling him the third or just James Ennis, but he had 11 points. He was very good in the game. The Pistons led by 30 points in the third quarter and almost squandered the game, which would have been just a devastating loss. But the Hawks didn't have, not only the Hawks, one of the worst teams in the NBA, but they didn't have their starting point guard, Dennis Schroeder. They didn't have former Piston Ersan Ilyasova, who's been a different difference maker for them lately. They didn't have Kent Bazemore, who's probably their most athletic player as well. All those guys are starters. And without those guys, they couldn't really do anything offensively against anyone, let alone the Pistons, who kind of toyed with them at times in the first half. The Hawks were 2-for-19 from three in the first half and scored just 33 points before halftime. I can't really tie that to defensive improvement for the Pistons. Obviously, that's a small part of it, but there was just no offensive talent out there for Atlanta throughout the game. Given that, I'm not going to credit the Pistons much for the first half, but I'm also not going to kill them for the near collapse at the end of the game. It's sports. It's human nature. You get up by a lot. You kind of relax a little bit. The other team wants to save face as competitors, and it snowballs a little bit. The Pistons, like I said, up by 30 and then almost blew the game, really, if you look at the numbers. But they didn't blow it, and if we're being honest, there was really no point in that fourth quarter where the game was really much in doubt. Now, maybe you might disagree with that, but you kept looking at the scoreboard and the time and thought there would have to be some really fluky stuff happening. The Hawks got as close as 4 points with 11 seconds left, but like I said, there would have needed to be something crazy for them to happen. And to the Pistons' credit, that didn't happen to a large extent in terms of making it more of a close game or getting the Hawks tied up or something like that. If that would have happened, we would have had quite an episode of Locked On Pistons. I would have guaranteed you that. But it didn't, and we can move on. We can't take too many good things from this game, beating up on a G League team, basically. And we can't take a lot of bad things either. It's a win they needed to have, a win they should have had. And now from here, the Pistons are off for the All-Star break until a week from Friday, February 23rd, when they'll be hosting the Boston Celtics, who are now the second-best team in the Eastern Conference, as they've kind of hit the tough part of their season. They're going to have to work through that as well. I think some things are catching up with them, a little bit of an overcorrection. I don't think they're as good of a team as they were early on in the season. There's just not the young players have kind of hit a wall. They've had lost 3 straight home games, I believe. And then the Toronto Raptors took over as the best team record-wise in the Eastern Conference. Andre Drummond heading to Los Angeles for the All-Star game. He's going to take part in the Skills Challenge during All-Star Saturday night, which a lot of you will be checking out, I'm sure. And he'll also be playing, obviously, in the All-Star game for Team LeBron on Sunday night at Staples Center. The All-Star game, it's kind of fun, but I'm skeptical of how a player like Andre will look in the game, let alone the Skills Challenge. I mean, I wouldn't exactly call Andre a skilled player. He deserves the All-Star nod as a replacement, and he's had a great season. He does a lot of great things. He's probably the best rebounder in basketball, obviously an important skill and trait to have, and he's turned himself into a very good defensive player over the years, although how good he is as a defensive player is up for debate out there, and we'll get into that as the season goes on, obviously, as we've had some time to parse that out as well over the last few years. He's a good passer, and that's a skill, but when I think of Andre's game, skill is not exactly the thing I think of first. But anyways, that's happening this weekend, and we'll be talking about all things All-Star Weekend, past, present, and future on Friday's episode of Locked On Pistons. You don't want to miss that one. So we're also going to be talking today about how Blake Griffin is bringing the TMZ world to Detroit, cracking headlines on the gossip websites and all that stuff. And we're going to give a little background on his famous connections throughout his time in Los Angeles as well. But if your company is interested in men between the ages of 18 and 44, then your company should be sponsoring this podcast. Locked On Pistons is listened to by 98% men and 80% between the ages of 18 to 44. So if you want men 18 to 44, this is your spot. Plus, our rates are reasonable. So email me at matt_shoch, S-C-H-O-C-H, at yahoo.com to find out more.
Yes, sir!
A little bit later on in the show, I'm going to bring up a couple of tweets from Pistons Nation that really summarize some things about the past week and also the All-Star break ahead and the rest of the season, too. But the Pistons' newly acquired Blake Griffin, he's a TMZ story, if you didn't know, which is a different thing for Pistons fans who have been mired with an irrelevant team on every level for the past decade or so. It's going to be a fish out of water segment here as I talk about this, as it's not really my forte, but I'm going to try to unpack all these things for the Pistons fans who need to get literally more acquainted with Blake Griffin, the new Pistons star. I almost tackled it on the first weekend that he was in town when word was coming that Griffin and Kendall Jenner were reportedly spotted in downtown Birmingham. As many of you probably know, or maybe all of you know, or very few, I really have no idea. And I promise you when I talk about this, I'm not trying to be, you know, the cool guy who doesn't know any of the Kardashian stuff. But I wanted to kind of break it down for you so you know. Anyways, Kendall Jenner, she's the daughter of Caitlyn Jenner and Kris Jenner. Kris Jenner being a woman, both of them being a woman also, obviously. Caitlyn Jenner, and of course I know this, it's not like I'm that out of touch, but she is formerly Bruce Jenner, the gold medal decathlete from back in the day, the Wheaties box guy. That was before my time, but as a sports fan, we certainly knew who Bruce Jenner was during his heyday. Kris Jenner, the mother of Kendall Jenner, was formerly married to Rob Kardashian, the OJ lawyer, who's dead now. And of course, they are the parents of the Kardashian girls, women, I guess now, Kim, Khloe, and Courtney, who were over the years linked to a plethora of NBA stars. And again, you probably know this, Kim Kardashian, obviously Kanye West's wife. So they, the Jenners and the Kardashians are stepsisters, the Kardashians and the Jenners. So Kendall Jenner, who is now linked romantically to Blake Griffin. She's 22, a very successful model. I've been perusing Wikipedia to get some of this stuff. Not that I didn't know a little bit about who these people were, but anyway. She's the older sister of Kylie Jenner, who is 20 years old, also a model. And they also have a stepbrother. They have many stepbrothers throughout these their parents' lives. But one of them is Bruce turned Caitlyn's sons from another marriage. His name is Brody Jenner. I've heard of him. He was on The Hills, if you know the gossip columns as well. Kylie, Kendall's younger sister, has her own reality show. So now Kendall and Kylie's older sister, Kendall, who is 22 years old, is dating Blake Griffin. Blake Griffin, the story that came out in TMZ Sports on Wednesday, also has two kids with Bryn Cameron, his ex from before. Bryn Cameron is also the ex of Matt Leinart when Matt Leinart was at USC as a football player. Bryn played basketball at USC when Leinart was there. Cameron has a child with Leinart too. So she has, I believe, three kids, one with Matt Leinart and two with Blake Griffin. Apparently, Griffin and Cameron, while they were in LA, and this is something I didn't really know, according to TMZ, they were on and off dating for about 8 years. Bryn Cameron, by the way, is also the sister of former Cleveland Browns and Miami Dolphins tight end Jordan Cameron, who did not play in 2017. I believe his career might be done. But if you're like me, you were probably really excited 1 year or a couple years to pick him up, Jordan Cameron, as a value, like fantasy football tight end option. And then you were probably very disappointed in how that went with injuries and stuff like that some seasons. But by the way, Bryn Cameron and Jordan Cameron, sister and brother, are Mormons, or they were Mormons at some point. So another wrinkle here. The confluence of characters and events in Blake Griffin's web here is like an onion, like a really horrible onion to keep peeling apart. But anyway, Jordan Cameron went to BYU to play basketball and then transferred to USC to play football eventually. Now, side note here, one of Griffin and Cameron's sons is named Ford, by the way. So a great Detroit name for Blake Griffin's son. Anyway, Griffin and Bryn Cameron were set to be married last summer. We start to parse some of this stuff from Bryn Cameron's lawsuit, and that was the news that broke on Wednesday on TMZ during their reports. They said, Blake Griffin cut the wedding off a week before it was set to happen last July in St. Bart's over a prenup dispute. Now, of course, Griffin, since then, has started apparently dating Kendall Jenner, and they're gallivanting around Metro Detroit. Although I guess in February, you probably can't do all that much gallivanting. You're more just surviving February in Detroit. But the lawsuit, Bryn Cameron is trying to get some bank over the breakup. So good for her, as you would imagine, with Blake's huge contract, $170-ish million. Her kids have got to be taken care of as well, as they should. And of course, if you're reading about Detroit sports, you've been reading a little bit about the Miggy Cabrera saga with his ex-mistress and his two kids with, like I said, the ex-mistress before. So this is a new thing for Detroit sports fans to have to deal with. But anyways, I went to the TMZ Sports website early on Thursday morning, and the three Griffin posts that they did on Valentine's Day, by the way, were among three of the top five popular stories at the time, and this one kind of has it all if you're a fan of Hollywood beef and gossip and whatnot. One of the posts was about how Griffin had a toxic relationship with Chris Paul of the Lakers when they played together. This is all according to Bryn Cameron from the documents of the lawsuit. I read that post, and there was nothing really too surprising to take away from it if you're a Pistons fan. Wasn't much of a bombshell there. I mean, Doc Rivers had to intervene in kind of an ego clash, and Griffin was maybe a little bit jealous of the leadership role that Chris Paul had. But yeah, I mean, of course, that sounds like the kind of thing that would happen with good NBA teams with a lot of stars and superstar egos that comes along with it. And Blake, Bryn took credit for giving Blake advice on how to communicate some of these things and all that. And Blake seems like a pretty soft-spoken guy who might be a little bit out of his element being a leader in a locker room and stuff like that. So not really too surprising on that front, but just something to think about for Pistons fans. How will this go for Blake Griffin in Metro Detroit, being a Piston for, you know, 9 months of the year or whatever it is that the athletes are, you know, home-based in the cities that they play for? How happy will he be in Detroit? I mean, we got Birmingham and downtown Royal Oak and Novi, but and downtown is all right now in Detroit, but I don't know. I mean, it's not that cool for a guy who's been living the LA life for the past several years, and maybe Blake's not interested in that. It's something that we probably will never be able to uncover the real thoughts of what Blake Griffin thinks about moving to Detroit and becoming a Detroit Piston, but worth thinking about that it might be a long 5 years for a guy who, by dating Bryn Cameron, who's linked to Matt Leinart, and Kendall Jenner, who's linked to, you know, OJ and the Kardashians and Kanye West and all that stuff, obviously he enjoys being in these high-profile relationships. There's a way to stay out of the tabloids, and that's to date regular models who aren't as big of a, you know, cultural figure as Kendall Jenner, sorry. But for him, you know, it might be a long 5 years in Detroit. And these are the kind of things, as the All-Star break comes on, we got to crack these nuts and figure out what this team is going to be like for the next season and for the next five seasons. So something to think about is Blake Griffin's off the court stuff, and he's the right to live his life, obviously. I mean, I'm not being critical of him. He can date whoever he wants to date, obviously. But if you're trying to be that psychologist about what's going to happen with Blake Griffin's tenure in Detroit, it's something to kind of keep in the back of your mind. But I'm going to bring up after the break here a couple tweets from Pistons Nation that really kind of summarize some things I thought that were pretty good indicators and looks at the past week and also the All-Star break ahead and really the rest of the season too here on Locked On Pistons. Wanted to highlight a couple of tweets from Pistons Nation today that I thought pretty much were a nice synopsis of where things are at and where they are possibly going. First of all, B-Ball Elite Keith, who you can find on Twitter at Big Keys, BIGKEEZ 102186. He said, "Been saying Blake Griffin is gassed since his third game in a Detroit uniform. Moved cross country, had to put in extra reps to get used to the team. A lot is fatigue and chemistry. It's still frustrating as hell, though." And I think Keith is correct on all those counts, by the way. I agree with him that Blake looks really tired, and I didn't watch Blake Griffin's whole career day in and day out throughout 82 games in several years like he's been over in the Clippers, but and maybe he is. Maybe that is one of the things about him that people don't like, is he's so demonstrative about how tired he is on the all the time. But he's had a few games with the Pistons where he's been frustrated, obviously, about half of the games he's played with the Pistons, and he's been missing shots and down on himself, and he just seems like a guy who not only is very tired, he's reaching down and he's squatted over and grabbing the bottom of his shorts and got his hands on his knees and all that stuff, but he's obviously very comfortable with everyone watching on TV and the opponents and everyone in the arena seeing that he's very tired. It's one of those weird things psychologically that some athletes don't want to do, but Blake Griffin is obviously about that, you know. And I don't know if, you know, the move or the emotional change and everything, you'd like to think that this week and a couple of extra days in there will be a good thing for Blake Griffin individually to kind of move on and accept the fact that he's with the Pistons and go forward in a positive way. Not that he hasn't emotionally, but you need some time to kind of reflect on where things are with your career, and hopefully he can do that. And obviously the rest will be probably good for his body, but also maybe more importantly, be good for his body and his mind and his soul and whatnot to just kind of do that. So I thought Keith kind of hit the nail on the head there during the Pistons game against the Hawks on Wednesday night as well. But one of the good tweets here that I saw as well was the Detroit Bad Boys account, the SB Nation blog, the Detroit Bad Boys, that if you're a Pistons fan, obviously you should be following these guys. And I'm not sure who runs the Twitter account for them, but a really good tweet from them. Again, this is, I believe, during the game as well from the Pistons, or maybe right after the game against the Hawks. But Stan Van Gundy, they said, the tweet goes on to say, Stan Van Gundy has one chance to save this season. He needs to spend the All-Star break rebuilding this offense and defense around Blake Griffin's strengths and weaknesses. Good luck. And I think that pretty much hit the nail on the head. That's what Stan Van Gundy and the staff have to do. They've got some time to do it. You've got to kind of throw a little mini training camp in at the beginning of next week. We'll find out some things where Andre and Blake can work together on the offensive and defensive ends to, in some ways, mitigate the things that they aren't and capitalize on the things that they are and become, you know, the two all-star caliber players they can and coexist as well as they possibly can together and then in separate lineups as well. Have them kind of be the anchors of those lineups in the way that they can and the things that they can do well as players. So it's, I don't know. And I mean, I thought when I said this, when they made the trade, I thought that this kind of bought Stan Van Gundy his fifth year on his contract to see, you know, in a whole offseason and a whole 82-game stretch of Griffin and Drummond and Reggie Jackson together. But if he doesn't show something as a coach and the ability to mesh these superstars or these stars, I'm not going to call either of these guys superstars, but these stars and really combine them and make harmonious basketball, that's really the main job of a head coach. And Stan Van Gundy has been successful in overachieving with average teams throughout his career, but he's never been able to take that team completely over the top. And obviously that's not fair in some respects because he hasn't had the rosters to do that in Miami and Orlando as far as going all the way and getting to the champ and getting the ultimate prize, the NBA championship. But with Detroit, he has no excuses because obviously he built this roster as the team president. So again, hats off to the Detroit Bad Boys for pointing out that this is what it's all about for this break. Get the players rested, get them healthy over the weekend or so, but get them in here early next week, get them back in a rhythm and implement some things system-wise to take advantage of what you do have and to mitigate what you don't have as far as a roster and a franchise. But coming up on Locked On Pistons on Friday, we'll have an everything All-Star Weekend past, present, and future episode of the show for the Detroit Pistons from their perspective. Really an underwhelming history for Pistons in terms of what they've meant to the NBA in historical fashion, which is a great deal, and everything that they've meant to All-Star Weekend, which is all not all that much. But I guess that makes sense when you think of the hallmarks of those great Pistons teams of the Bad Boys and the going to work era. It wasn't all about the glitz and the glamour, and it's probably something that Pistons fans love, that they've been a little underrepresented in terms of the bright lights of All-Star Weekend, which is probably the, other than the NBA Finals, but in some ways even eclipsing the NBA Finals as the NBA Showcase Weekend, so to speak, with a lot of the things that happen off the court there. But Thanks for listening, everyone. You should be locked listening and following the Locked On NBA Network Twitter handle at Locked On NBA Net. Go ahead and follow us. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Give us a rating there as well. Follow all the social media channels, including our Facebook page at Locked On Pistons-Matchuk. So enjoy the night, and we'll talk to you previewing All-Star Weekend on Friday's podcast. And thanks for listening, everyone. We'll talk to you all again soon.